give that shit up, you're going to concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Welcome to this week's edition of a Roy Orbison Tattoo Podcast with me, Colm, and my co-hosts, Bossy and Paul. This is the coaching podcast with a difference. We watch a movie, it might help if you watch it too, we get a special guest on, and we discuss the coaching from the movie and how it relates to our own experiences. So whether you're in the car, out for a run or a walk, or just using us to cancel out the noise from the kids in the background, we hope you enjoy.
So welcome. I'm delighted to say that we've got Derek Wittenberg with us of the 1983 NCAA champion Wolfpack. So thanks for joining us, Derek.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it. This podcast is all the way from where? Where are you guys from?
Ireland.
Ireland. Wow. Yeah. I drank a lot of Irish whiskey before, so I mean, I can relate a little bit.
Brilliant. So, like, you're probably the star of the show in Survive in Advance, but you were behind actually getting the film made, and you were an executive producer on it. Like, what was the thinking behind it, or what was your inspiration to get that done?
Well, the story is interesting in the fact that I was a coach at Wagner College, and I had some pretty good success there. And then I was, the year I was fired was probably 2010. And I kind of took some time off, and then got with ESPN around 2011 and started working for ESPN. And I saw the Fab Five film on the Michigan team. And I called up Jonathan Hawk, who I did some work with at Fordham, and said, I think we got a good story, the 83 story. And long story short, 2 years later, 2013, we put together this documentary. And just, it was about me telling the story 30 years ago about my team, about my coach, and about my experience going to NC State. And Lord knows, we didn't know it was going to turn out the way it's going to turn out. And it just turned out to be a special project, and people all over the world, even in Ireland, right?
Yeah.
Are still talking about it, which is pretty cool. So guys, I mean, I just think that I'm so happy, you know, something comes really good from something you think is bad, right? You think you get fired, and all of a sudden your world is upside down. If I were to still be coaching, I would have never produced Survive in Advance.
Yeah.
So I think it was a very positive, I made it a positive situation. Something that looked very negative, but I made it very positive.
Yeah.
Isn't that something in life where people have setbacks in life or things don't go the way they planned, but they have to make something out of it themselves to advance their careers, basically? And
yeah, absolutely. Well, what we think about is trials and tribulations of life, and life is not fair. It's not easy, and things are going to happen, and you got to be able to survive them. And I think that during that time, I just remained positive. It's not the end of the world. I mean, because you get fired, okay, I mean, it's the end of the world. You pick up and you see where your journey lies from there. And that's what I did. And I tell people, I go speak across the country at different companies and teams and universities, what have you. And I said, I said, it was one of the best things that ever happened in my life. You know, 68 million people watched Survive in Advance last Christmas. And I said, you know, that's what it's about. Sharing a great story and a great moment about persevering, right? You learn a lot in that film. It's about persevering, about teamwork, leadership, believing in yourself. So there's a lot of lessons that you can learn through Survive in Advance.
Yeah. And like one of the things that you mentioned there, like you had a bit of adversity during the year when you had the broken foot. And how did your role, or let's say Coach Valvano and you, how did you discuss what your role was going to be while you were out injured? Because I know it said in the film about your when you gave the speech and you probably went around head to head with every player in the dressing room. How did your role evolve during that time of injury?
The main thing was me to focus on my rehab and trying to come back and supporting the guys. I still participated in practice. I still went to the games and supported our guys and just being positive and helping guys and encouraging really Sydney and Ernie and those guys when I was out to really have some confidence and step up. And those guys did that. They took a little, obviously the first 5 or 6 games, they struggled and then they figured it out and they started to get better. So I was just thinking, nobody knew whether I was going to come back or not. But I had an idea that I had a chance to come back because I did the same thing in high school. So I was kind of prepared mentally on what to do. And when I got that checkup and it was 75-80% healed, so to speak, I said, you know, let's tape it up and let's go. So my role is to like try to get back and get my spot and get back and help the team. But I also had to understand, and Valvano talked to me about this, I had to understand the team had adjusted without me. And now I got to kind of adjust to them. And then mentally I did. And Valvano just ended up starting me and inserting me right back in the lineup.
And Jimmy Valvano was like, he was a dreamer. Like from the start, he said, I'm going to win a national championship when he first met. Now I know yourself and Sid were saying since he left high school and went to NC State that he felt like you were going to win a championship anyway. But did after your first year, did you find a bit, maybe this is going to be tougher than we thought?
Well, of course, the competition is stiff. And the ACC at the time was the best conference in the country. I mean, we had Michael Jordan, James Worthy, Ralph Sampson, the late Lenny Bias, Adrian Branch. Maryland had a really good team. So those were really good teams. Of course, it was going to be difficult. The first year we went 20-8 with Norm Sloan, and we had the regionals in Greensboro, and we win 4 games. We can get to the championship, and we just wasn't ready. We had a poor game and lost. Second year was Valvano's first year. My second year, Valvano's first year, and we were 500, so we struggled a little bit. The next year, my junior year, we were 22-12. And was playing in Indianapolis against Chattanooga, and there was a delay, and they upset us. So my senior year was it. I mean, we got to do something my senior year. North Carolina had won the championship in 1982, so it's some urgency about us winning as well. And we started off great that year, and then we hit Virginia, and we do some strides. But I think that once we the Wake Forest game at home, we scored 124 points. It was 124-90, senior day. I think that was the game that took us to the next level. I think that game gave us confidence going into the ACC tournament that, hey, we beat North Carolina at home. We just killed Wake Forest. We went into the ACC tournament with some momentum.
Yeah, and like you were from there on, you were kind of an underdog in the ACC, weren't you? Like you suited you, did it, being an underdog?
Yeah, we didn't consider ourselves an underdog, but you know the odds were when we played in the semifinal games, we beat Wake Forest, and then we played Michael Jordan's team and Sam Perkins in the semifinal game, and nobody gave us a chance there, and we came back in overtime and beat them. Then there were Ralph Sampson. Championship game in the ACC tournament, great player. We can't stop him. Valvano said, that's it. We putting 2 guys on him. And that's the way we played the rest of the game. He came back and won. So, I mean, I think the ACC tournament gave us a lot of confidence going into the tournament. And because we believe if you could beat the number one, the number two team in the country in a tournament that you can possibly beat anybody you face going forward.
So you went on then to Pepperdine and you stayed in this lovely 5-star hotel, which I'd say had a few stories from it. But just looking back at the film, were the rules different in different conferences? Like there was no 3-point line in that game. Am I right in saying that?
There was no 3-point line in the NCAA. it was experimental during the year.
Okay.
So we conferences had it in the conference during the regular season, but we didn't have it during the tournament.
Right.
And so that's why it looked differently. We still shot the same shots. It didn't matter. But in the NCAA, it was no three-point shot.
Very good.
And in terms of that, actually, around the no shot clock and the different scoring system, do you think the game is better or worse off now because of the rule changes from back then?
Absolutely. This was interesting, guys. So we did change all these rules. You got 3-point shot, your shot clock, but we actually scored more points back then.
Right.
And some of the what attributes to that is that most of the guys stayed in school. So Ralph stayed 4 years, James were. So the teams were veteran teams, and they were good skilled veteran players. So the teams were better. Now, yes, the game is better, but in college, the game is younger.
Yeah.
Because all the best talent leave every year. So, you know, go have some nights they're going to score and some nights they're not. Like this Virginia game we're going to play tonight, Virginia likes to play in the 50s and the 60s. Okay. You know, so that this game is going to be the first one to 60 wins, you know, because defense, but they play really slow. They play really great defense and deliberate offense.
Okay.
So you have to show defensive patience because they're going to just run motion and run around the screen. And they're going to absolutely take the very best shot with 15 to 20 seconds left on the clock. That's just how they operate. And then they don't give you nothing easy on defense. So, yes, the rules have changed. Yes, it's better. And I think it's going to continue getting more better. But the athletes are more athletic, bigger and stronger. There's more kids athletic across the board. So I love the game to where it is now. And I think it's getting better and better.
Let's say the rules that kind of forced Jimmy V's hand in a few of the games, like when there was no shot clock and you were down 7 points with 2 minutes to go, and Jimmy V came up with the idea, let's foul them to get the ball back. Let's get them to the free throw line so that you get the ball back in the hand. Like, was that a unique thing at the time? And I'm presuming.
Goodness. Unconventional is the word. Yeah. We fouled Virginia in the Western Regionals Finals, guys, with a tie score.
Yeah.
It was a tie score. We fouled. I mean, you can't find no coach. Everybody's done these special defenses, or which we call trick defenses, right? But there's no coach, very few, that's actually put two people on one guy. Mm. And didn't even guard. We didn't guard somebody. It was 3 against 4. So we had 2 guys on Ralph, maybe 4 guys on Ralph. Who knows? But nobody did that. We fouled North Carolina. If they hit their free throws, if they hit one and one, guys, you're not talking to me. You're talking to James Worthy. You know, you're not talking to me today. So thank goodness they missed, so you could talk to me today. You know, that's what's cool about it. It was just amazing. That the decision, and he made it spontaneous on the fly. This is what we're going to do, guys. Bear with me. Let's do this thing. This is what we're going to do. And every time he did it, it worked.
Like the best thing about it was, and I think it was you who done it, was like that tactical foul on the freshman Franklin, because he wasn't going to be good enough in that clutch moment to deliver, you know?
Oh, okay.
Like,
yeah, can you imagine? I can put all of you guys on the line right now with 50 million people watching you, and you got to make 2 free throws to go ahead in the game. The lights are bright, national TV, there's 19,000 people in Albuquerque. You know, you would probably shit your pants too.
and how did the tactical fouling go down with, say, the media and other coaches? Was it something like saying, oh, that's a brilliant idea, or they saying, no, that's a real negative play?
Oh, no, it was a brilliant idea that none of them would think about doing. but now, I think more coaches are starting to understand that Valvano's philosophy is number one, I'm not going to let the best player beat me. And number two, that I may have to do whatever I have to do, to, regardless of the game plan. I may have to change the game plan. I might have start. It's just like Mike Tyson said, right? Everybody yeah. has a plan until they get hit in the mouth. And then they say, oh, well, wait a minute. I don't know if I'm going to get too close to this guy. It's the same thing with sports and basketball and decision making. You know, you get in there in the game and a guy goes left. You say, coach, he went left. You told me he's going to go right, but he went left. You know, you got to make adjustments. And that's what he was really good at. He was a great game coach. He can make adjustments on the fly. And he's very confident about his the moves that he made. And 9 times out of 10, they worked.
Yeah, he seemed to be really comfortable in the ability to view something and change what the plan was. And he seemed to really be comfortable. And it seemed to be something that Eyal seemed to embrace as well. That he didn't go, I don't know about that. He seemed to kind of, let's do it.
Well, we had something that people are searching for today, right? We had trust and truth. We believed in our coach. We trusted in him. We trusted in our teammates. But he told us the truth. And he cared about us. And I think a lot of teams, a lot of companies, a lot of everybody's searching for that, right? You know, that trust, love, truth, teamwork, you know, what that's all about. I mean, we had that. And I think that he was the leader. He led by example. And we knew we cared about him and we could trust him. So if he had an idea, man, we didn't question it. We went with it 100%.
I suppose the thing that really stood out to me and really showed why you were successful within the film was the scenes 30 years later when you were producing it and you were in the bar in the restaurant just chatting, and how comfortable you all still were in each other's company 30 years later. Like, that shows the real success of a team, I suppose, you know?
It does, and his legacy lives on through that experience with us winning the championship. Starting the Jimmy V Foundation, which he later passed away with cancer. And now we're fighting for him to find a cure. And we've done so well with the foundation. But that was Jim's personality. He loved life. He loved helping people. He just loved relationships. So that was him. And that's what made us successful. The leader really was really true. He was a true guy that cared about his players, cared about his people, and we would run through a wall for him.
Yeah, he seemed to build a really strong bond with everybody he met, and everybody within the system seemed to just have so much affection for him.
Well, yeah, because that was his personality, man. Listen, I've been around Denzel Washington, the president, Barack Obama. I've been around a lot of NBA players. But, man, the personality this man had is, you know, magnetic, infectious, just glowing. He could light the room up. He was funny. He was witty. He was smart. He was real. I mean, it's hard to describe his personality. And it was just, we anywhere he went, we drew people. Mm. We drew people everywhere. And he was funny. He could tell jokes. But he was caring. I get all kinds of stories. People said Jimmy stopped him and talked to him for 30 minutes, total strangers. I mean, that was just his personality.
Yeah.
And me and him have a very similar personality as well, that we care about people. We don't mind talking to anybody from anywhere. We respect people for who they are. And and I learned so much from Jimmy, and he was the guy for us for NC State basketball. He's the guy that took us to the next level.
Yeah, excellent. And talk to me about his speeches. Like, I know the two speeches from the ESPYs and, I don't know, it was a Millionaires Club that were in the movie. But you alluded to him, his pregame speeches and his halftime speeches were just amazing. Like, is there any insight into that? Like, what was it personal stuff he was talking about, or trying to get your emotions moving?
You know, every game has a motivation. You got to understand the function of a coach. The coach is always speaking, right? And before practice, you give a speech. During practice, you instruct and you communicate. After practice, you give another speech. A coach may go to an alumni meeting after practice. He gives another speech. So a coach is constantly speaking. And so within the moments and certain games, they had historical significance. Like he always would, when we played North Carolina, who was our rival at the time, he always had a story from a former player or somebody that he read that he, you know, you wanted to motivate the players.
Yeah.
And he was really, really good at it. And I had the opportunity not just to play for him, but I coached with him later. So I saw the genius, right? I saw his wittiness. And a lot of times he just came off the cuff. He didn't read anything. It was all his feel and everything was in his heart. So we knew he was genuine just the way he delivered everything. It was passionate. It was sincere. He did his homework. He spent time with you. So his ability to take the situation and what in what context and what perspective, he was able to have a speech ready for us at any time, even given day. Like if somebody pulled me over right now and say, listen, I got a group of kids over here down in the park. I want you to give them a motivational speech. Well, I got a speech ready. I'm like, Vivano, you know, hey, survive in advance, right? This is the things you got to concentrate during the pandemic, during social injustice. You know, are you taking care of your health? I mean, I got a speech ready. So that's the function of a coach, right? You're always speaking, you're always helping people, you're always communicating. And those transferable skills, right, they transfer to being a CEO of a company, being a president of a company, going around the country and speak. It's just part of what we do and that we enjoy doing every day.
Back to the game. You seem to get heckled an awful lot from the opposition players. What was the reason for that?
Man, I don't know, man. They were just talking a little trash. That's all part of the game. It's a lot of talking out there. You just don't hear it because we don't have mics on. But there's a whole lot of talking out there. And it's kind of, it's all about competition. It wasn't nothing malicious. And I hear it all the time. So on the Virginia bench, it was, you know, when I come by, they say, miss it. You know, I probably would say the same thing. It was I said, the beautiful thing about what they say on the bench, they're on the bench. They can't do nothing about it anymore. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, that's all part of competition. You know, you can believe that. You know how American football is. They're talking. I watch soccer a lot. They out there talking trash to each other, too. So yeah. It's in all of our sports, man. It's just part of the game. And I don't pay attention. I'm so focused. You know, guys, I couldn't hear anything. Like, I can only hear the coach and my teammates. And that's the level of focus that we had. That you get so used to playing in front of big crowds, and then you have to have extreme focus. And so I had that kind of focus. I developed that. And I was a serious guy, too. Once I stepped on the court, I wanted to kill you. Okay, that's it. I didn't care who you were. I wanted to beat you. I was serious. It was competition time. I was serious. And so I always had that kind of demeanor where I was mentally prepared. I want to be tough mentally and physically. And in some ways, I wanted to intimidate you if I could by making shots. You know, I make a three-pointer, and I said, you know, you got some more of these coming. Just relax and wait. You got some more coming, buddy.
Yeah.
You got some more coming. You can't guard me tonight. That was my favorite one. You can't guard me. You better go get the police because you can't guard me, man. Somebody lock me up. I'm killing this guy. This guy can't handle me. You know, we would say little stuff like that.
Yeah. What did Michael Jordan say to that?
You know, Michael, believe it or not, in college, he was kind of quiet. Yeah. And then when he got to the pros, he was talking his head off. Because after the third year, Michael discovered, like, you know what? Guess what, guys? I'm better than all these guys. He says, you know, so I'm going to talk to him as I dunk on him and do my thing. Listen, there's a distinct, I want you to understand this, guys, about competition. There's certain guys that are competitors, but there's certain guys that are predators. And you know the difference between a competitor and a predator. A predator wants to eat competitors. A competitor is a guy that just wants to compete every now and then. A predator wants to compete at everything they do, every practice, every drill. He wants to knock your head off. He don't care what it is, if it's checkers, if it's running to the parking lot. That's a predator. And so I developed that definition because I looked at guys like Larry Bird. I looked at guys like Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson, right? Because they separated themselves from everybody else. They were extreme competitors in their life. Even my high school coach that passed away last year, Morgan Wooten, won 1,274 games, never had a losing season, won 87% of his games. The first high school in Oakland, I found out that, man, this guy competed at everything. He hated to lose at anything. And so those guys, I characterize them as these predators, right? These unique guys that was fierce competitors in everything that they do. You know, I'm even competitive. I want to write a book, and I'm writing my book, but I'm trying to produce a bestseller. I just don't want to write a book. I looked at the shelf and you see all these books, but they just books, right? Some I'm going to sell, some I'm not. But I want to write something that's impactful, that's going to teach people about, you know, empowering themselves, that they can be successful in their journey. Look how I adjusted to all the trials and tribulations in my life. And you can do the same thing. So I'm trying to put a book on the shelf, number one, that I'm going to sell. And number two, that people are going to be inspired and empowered, and they're going to learn something from it.
Very good. Very good. Sounds all good. And
you guys are getting all this shit for free. You understand? People pay for this, right? At least you can send me some damn Irish whiskey or something down there from Ireland. But people pay lots of money to hear me give this kind of testimony. I just want you guys to understand that.
We're very aware of it. And it's well worth big money as well. Like, that is powerful enough stuff.
I had a question there. Hey, so,
I've never been to Ireland, one of the best golf destinations in the world.
Yeah.
You guys got to get me to Ireland. I got to speak in front of the group. I want to drink Irish whiskey. I'm going to play golf. And I'm going to speak. I want to do it for about 7 days in a row. Okay.
Colin will hook you up there.
So you guys work on that for me. We're going to fly Derek Woodbury in. We're going to get him a speaking engagement. He's going to play golf. He's going to drink Irish whiskey. I guarantee you, we'll have the best time of your life. He's coming to Ireland.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. So, I was going to say there, before you went in to play Houston, you were the underdogs. And Valvano told the world that you're going to keep the ball. And he went into you guys and he tore up that script and he said, just go at them. Did that really empower you and give you that belief that you just wanted to have a go and take them on?
Well, first of all, people outside of the team thought we had no chance, right? Yeah. So inside the team, we know there was hogwash. So that was, once again, Valvano taking that narrative and using that to motivate us. Said, nobody thinks y'all going to win. They think we're here by accident. We dreamed about this. We talked about winning a national championship, and now we're here. You think we're going to hold the ball? Hell with holding the ball. Let's go out there and play our game and kick their ass. Let's go. That was the speech. That was the speech, guys. That was the exact speech that Valvano gave us. He had drawn Brilliant. All this stuff on the board. He said, we don't need this stuff on the board. We know what we need to do. We already went over it. Nobody thinks we're going to win. And so when I got into coaching, you know, I adopted some of those same characteristics. I looked for those ordinary kids, those tough kids that was dreaming and guys that want to achieve something that was bigger than themselves. And so that's what Valvano, that was the genius of Valvano, that mm-hmm. he put us in that, that he taught us, you know, about being enthusiasm, taught us about motivating people. And, you know, I tell you, it's a beautiful thing, guys. I mean, you guys have never heard me speak in front of a crowd, but man, it's just magical when you can move people, because a lot of people can, you know, motivate somebody for a day, but can you empower them to change, right? Because everybody's struggling with something. Everybody needs a boost. But can you empower them to do something different that's going to help them be better in their life? That's the key to motivation. That's the key to empowering. Can you make people believe that you can be the best you can be? You got to start believing in yourself. And Muhammad Ali has the best quote of them all. Don't forget to bet on yourself. You know, part of people's aspirations and plans is that they don't end up finishing, but they, more importantly, they don't believe in themselves, especially when the times are tough, especially when something goes wrong, they stop believing themselves. So Muhammad Ali's quote, hey, don't forget to bet on yourself and believe in yourself.
Like, and that comes back to like that final 9-game run. Like, there was so much resilience shown there in them clutch moments that you just constantly delivered every single game. Like, that belief.
Every game. Yeah, every game and every moment. You know, when you're focused in the moment, I mean, that's one, you know, if one ball goes in and one thing, you know, we could have easily not been the champion. But we were so determined and so focused in what we were doing, and things happened for us. And listen, it's part competition and preparation. It's part miracle. It's part luck. It's all the evolve. A lot of things that happen, guys, is, you know, destined to happen. And so as much as we wanted, the other teams didn't want it to happen, we made it happen. And that's the beauty about it. And it's just, I just can't believe, guys, if you look at it, I'm 60 years old. It was 38 years ago. Man, I would have never imagined that I'd be talking to three guys from Ireland about Irish whiskey and an NC State national championship. I had no idea. Here I am from Washington, D.C., and I had the opportunity to meet the first African-American president. And now, 38 years later, I'm here meeting my three guys from Ireland that had no idea. And look, this film brought us together, right? Mm. The lessons that you learned and what you saw in that film empowered you guys to learn. And hopefully you can use a lot from the film and the conversation we had to help yourself and to help others. Because at the end of the day, guys, I said this in Thurl Bailey's book. At the end of the day, before we leave this earth, your legacy is going to be about not how many cars you got, not how many houses, how nice your house is. It's going to be, what did you leave mankind? What people did you help along the way? That's going to be your legacy.
Very true. It's only what to be remembered. Derek, we won't keep you much longer. No, I just have a few small things. One, how did you feel after you won the final and you realised you cheated on Jimmy V by not hugging him straight after the match?
Well, you know, the real story of that is that I don't know why I did it. And I started in the ACC tournament. And, you know, I just recently came back. You know, me and him had a great relationship. We loved each other. We spent a lot of time with each other. I remember he reading me letters in his office that, you know, we were down in the South. There was a lot of racism and people were talking about, I can't believe you starting the All Black starting five. And we used to talk about politics and race and all kinds of things. And, you know, so I had a close relationship with Coach V, and something in my mind, I have no idea why I did it. After every game, I just went over and grabbed him and picked him up and started hugging him. I have no idea why I did it. You know, it was just spontaneous. I have no idea. And at the end, when the shot went in, my parents are there. So I ran over and tried to hug my parents. And then I was going to look for Jimmy, and Jimmy was looking for me. And, you know, it was people running around everywhere, guys. It was everywhere. So we couldn't see nobody. And then I finally got there and said, man, I was looking for you. Where were you? I said, just give me a big hug right now. And magical moment, guys. Magical moment. And for a man from New York that grew up in Long Island, New York, that had a dream to win a national championship, to come and meet. Never knew I would meet this guy. Never knew our paths would cross. And just extraordinary. All the stories of the guys and the team and the coaches and everything. And V, it's just extraordinary stuff, man. And it's, and Survive in Advance just really took it to another level.
Yeah.
And made people realize what a great, great run it was.
Did he tell you not to pass to your teammate who was open?
Well, Terry Gannon was over there, but there's no way I was going to pass to that little shit. I don't know what the hell he's going to do. He might have been scared. I don't know what he's going to do. So, look, I didn't even look over there. You know how people put their hands up and they act like they want it, but they're really hoping that you don't throw the ball to them? He had that kind of look like, yeah, I want it, but you don't have to throw it to me, right?
He took his hands down.
Here, second question I have for you, second last one I have for you is, your game, you were a 3-point shooter. You had a fantastic field goal percentage in college. Like, if you were finishing college now in today's NBA, like, would you be on a max contract?
I'd be rich. I would be rich.
Yeah.
I would be rich. Are you incredible? I was Steph Curry before Steph Curry. I would be rich. First of all they do is shoot threes and nobody plays defense. Nobody blocks nobody out. Nobody takes a charge. It's so much easier to play now. I would be rich.
last thing, Derek. Like, I know that you got so much from Jimmy V, but like the speech he gave at your 10-year anniversary when he said the things that ye gave him, ye taught him about hope, about how to dream, about being persistent and to love each other. And like, for him as a coach to be able to reflect and to gain that from the players, like a lot of time coaching is a one-way street, but he obviously it was just two-way flow constantly with him. Like,
well, it was different back then, guys, because, you know, we were raised differently, right? And if you think about this, okay, and I got a pretty impeccable memory, but you remember your coaches more than you remember your teachers, because your coaches end up spending more quality time with you, right? If you go to practice, sometimes your coach take you out to eat. You know, you spend weekends with your coach. You spend a lot of quality time with your coach. A lot of people remember their coaches. And what we taught him is that we were a bunch of guys that believed in him, and he believed in us. And so in terms, we bought in. And the thing that we all are looking for, we're looking for truth, trust, and transparency. And that team had it. It was transparent in our focus and our vision that the main goal for everybody that we wanted to win. Today, guys, the main goal for everybody is all our college kids, they want to get to the NBA. So the agendas and the times are different. So what he learned for us is that we were the kids that we were coachable kids. We worked hard. We never questioned authority. That's opposite of today. We didn't have social media. You know, we didn't have a bunch of people in our heads. Our parents told us to respect authority. So it was a different era and a different time. And so what he learned from us and the things we learned to him, that made it special. That that brought that the three T's together. The trust, the truth of what he was and who he was and who we were, and then the transparency that everything was out on the table. And the locker room, guys, is very sacred, because when a team is in the locker room, it's an intimate setting with a bunch of guys that experiences something that they've gone through. And we talk about life. We talk about a lot of things in that locker room, but the locker room is a learning experience for teams. And you can't underestimate that experience. That's why coaches don't like letting people in locker rooms, because there's a lot of things that empty out the locker room. And a coach will tell you what we learn, what we talk about in the locker room stays here when you leave here. We don't discuss things that we talk about in the locker room. So that's what made that relationship special. That's what made that team special. And until the day I die, guys, it's something that I'm going to share with people for the rest of my life.
Brilliant, brilliant. Derek, you've been really, really good with your time. Thank you very much for coming on us. We're going to get to work straight away on arranging this talking, golfing, and drinking tour in Ireland 2022.
I'm going to give you guys 2 years.
We'll get it done.
I'm going to give you 2 years. 2023. I want to be in Ireland on the golf course with you three guys in our golf course with Irish whiskey, okay? And maybe a little coffee to kind of balance it out. And I'm going to tell you so many stories and make your head spin. I have my book out by then. And so I'm giving you guys 2 years.
We'll get it done.
I didn't ask you guys. The people pay me for this. So I'm giving you guys 2 years to get a company, to get a school, bring me over there. I'm gonna be dynamic. You're gonna thank me 100 times when I come over there and give this it's empowering speech. The economy's gonna be better, the pandemic's gonna be better. I'm giving you guys 2 years. Okay.
Derek, if you're over with us, right, and we're in the bar and we're drinking, and one of us was drinking shandies, so beer and lemonade, what would you do?
There's no drinking during the season, okay? Let's get that straight, all right? No drinking during the season. I know you Irishmen can't help it, okay? I know you can't help it. But let me tell you a story about that. So when I went over to France, I played over in France. I played in Le Mans, 24 hours of Le Mans. I played in the city. My coach was Kenny Grant. So I'm playing with all these French guys. There's only two Americans on the team. The other American team was Jim Johnstone. So I start playing, and then, you know, in Europe, you guys eat twice a day. You eat one meal from 12 to 2 and another meal 4 to 6. So I got used to that. So when I was eating with the guys, I used to see these French guys. They're drinking wine like shit. They're drinking wine and shit. I said, what the hell are they doing before the game? And I said, it was one guy that was a pretty good player. And I said, really good shooter. And he says, that's what we do normally. We don't drink Coca-Cola. We drink wine. I said, okay. I started drinking wine just like them. And shoot, I was even playing better. So I said, this is pretty good. This red wine, I would drink this stuff all the time. So you know what? Drink it at the right time. There's nothing wrong with it, guys. Nothing wrong. You can't drink during the season. Now, any of you guys coaches?
Yeah, we're all coaches.
In different sports.
Oh, yeah. You're all coaches.
Yeah, we coach Gaelic football and hurling. So they're the national sports in Ireland. They're hurling is kind of like a mixture of lacrosse and hockey, field hockey.
Yes.
And Gaelic football is like a mixture of rugby and soccer. So
yeah,
that'd be our backgrounds where we come from, and we'd be coaches and that. So
how about basketball?
No, that's why we're talking to you. We're trying to learn, and we'll get into it next season.
Okay. Well, listen, you got to put together a clinic. That's how you learn.
Yeah.
That's how you learn. You learn You know, you learn certain drills, you don't practice. You guys come to America, you come to some clinics, or, you know, you bring somebody up. That's how you learn. You learn through the clinics. You know, actually, my high school coach has they don't do it anymore. He had a big clinic with 600 people. Coaches from all over come to his high school clinics. He brings in coaches like myself, some of the top college coaches, and these clinics are huge. So keep searching for those clinics. And now a lot of people are doing things online as well.
That's where we're doing most of our work at the moment, with coach education. So, yeah, it's all constant learning. It never stops.
Yeah, and you can apply the same principles, guys, to any sport. The one thing I would say for you in coaching is that get to know your guys. Get to know the players, not just sports. Get to know who they are. You never know when they bring in. You know, I always tell guys, you know, keep your sports and your home life and your school separate, because you don't want to, if you had a bad test, you don't want to bring that to practice. Or you break up with your girlfriend, you don't want to bring that in the classroom. But get to know your guys, because they may be going through things and things. You don't know situations about them, what's happening. Get to know your players. So you got to do little exercises that trigger them to talk to each other, communicate. But more importantly, you got to get to know them. Ask them something else other than sports. When you talk to them before practice, talk about a current event. Talk about, you know, and ask them, involve them, what do you think about this? What do you think? What's your definition of teamwork? Now, what did you guys go? So get to know your guys. I think that's very important.
Right, guys. So what were your, I suppose, favorite parts of the show, or what were your main teaching points or anything that you enjoyed?
My favorite part of the show was the lads sitting around the table, having a few drinks, just reminiscing about the season of 1983. And they're able to reconnect, slag each other off, talk about the good times, talk about things were tough, talk about Jimmy. And I thought it was just a fantastic way for the film to flow right through the film. Sorry.
Yeah, for me, my favorite part was the significance of them practicing, celebrating by practicing cutting the net down.
Yes.
And like just getting the head around what it's actually like to win, and that feeling of winning, and making it, normalizing it. I was involved with a team before, and after a training session, we'd hug each other just because it wasn't a thing that I suppose was done typically. But if you won a competition, that's the kind of thing that would be happening, you know, when it was something that worked with that particular team, you know. And
how did the players react to that, Paul?
I suppose initially, with everyone, there's a bit of, geez, what are we doing here? Hmm. But it just became the norm.
Yeah, and like, I think they sort of alluded to that in the movie, that the first year they did it, it was kind of like, but by the third year they were doing it, there was a comfort to it, and I suppose they knew what they were trying to get at. Just for anyone who has seen the film, the I suppose two of the speeches that Jimmy Valvano did that kind of get shown in the film, they're both on YouTube. And I think one was to a millionaires club or something like that. It was kind of a corporate gig, and the other was at the ESPYs, and they're brilliant speeches. So if you do get a chance to have a watch of them on YouTube, do throw them on, because I think there's so much learning out of it about the human side of coaching as much of anything else. And one of the things he said it in the film, like, that every day you should laugh, you should think, and your emotions should move you to tears. And if you do that, that's a complete day. And like for Jimmy, that was probably the last few years of his life was doing that, you know. And I also loved the comment as well, was ordinary people do extraordinary things. I really like that. So I'm giving him 5 out of 5 anyway, lads. What are you giving him?
Yeah, he was just amazing throughout the film there. It was well worth watching, as well worth getting ESPN on a 7-day free trial.
Yeah, look, he was real. He was good, and he was quirky, and he was this kind of outlandish, over-the-top character that his players absolutely loved him, you know. And look, it was good. And he like as Derek said already there, like he done things that were outside the box with the tactical foul and a few other little bits and pieces. But yeah, 4.3 for me.
Always one awkward to make the score awkward.
I give 4.7 then Cullum.
All right, thanks, Massey.
Just to help you out there.
That was around 4.5 every week. Okay, that's three between us. Derek, we're going to leave you go. Thanks very much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
We're going to get working on the
Thank you, Derek
Wittenberg Ireland Tour 2022-23 Masterclass Series.
Book signing, golf tour.
Book signing, everything.
Yeah, so I have your details. So as soon as we get that started, I'll be in touch.
Let's stay in touch. If you guys ever get to the States and come to North Carolina, please don't hesitate to call me. And good luck in your coaching and whatever you do. And God bless you guys.
Thank you, Derek.
Thank you very
Best
much.
Thank you.
Derek. We are into season 4, so thanks to everyone who has listened so far. We would be very grateful if you would take the time to retweet the show on Twitter or just share it with your friends. It would also be great if you could give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It would mean a lot to us and we would really appreciate it. I hope you all have a great week, and we will talk to you all next Tuesday when we are speaking to Brian Dowling, the Kilkenny Camogie manager, and we are watching the film Finding the Way Back, starring Ben Affleck. See you then, everybody.